Protecting the most vulnerable, especially children, is a critical principle throughout Scripture. And the main vehicle that God has instituted to protect children is marriage.
Katie Faust talking about her presentation at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Adults, especially Christian adults, should never ask a child to sacrifice their fundamental right to be known and loved by both their mother and father just so an adult can have something that they want. That means adults need to do hard things in their own lives, and that also means that adults, especially Christians, need to fight for child-centric public policy as well.
You can watch Katie Faust's presentation, Making the Case for Children's Rights, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Conference registrants can watch live and on demand. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, same-sex marriage started, if I remember, in the state of Massachusetts with some basically local authorities saying, hey, I think we'll perform some same-sex marriages. And it was not that long. In fact, it was rather quickly, within less than 10 years, that the Supreme Court said same-sex marriage is legal in the United States. And Massachusetts is at it again. It's not same-sex marriage this time. It's polygamy, as many people predicted would follow same-sex marriage. Joining us to talk about the possibility of legalizing polygamy, Katie Faust, founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us, and co-author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Massachusetts Town Legalizes Polygamy Using Same Arguments for Gay Marriage. Katie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Tell us about what has happened recently in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, the small town of Somerville has, in essence, legalized polyamorous relationships. While they were going through their domestic partnership law, they were discussing how it should change to be more gender neutral, of course. And then somebody said, well, why do we only have two places listed? Is there a good reason? And one of the city council members said, well, I don't think there is a good reason. You know, maybe we should have more than two spaces for spouses on this domestic partnership. And so that's what they did. They allowed for more than two to be listed on this domestic partnership law and became the first in the country to formalize polyamorous relationships.
So tell us a little bit about the reasoning. You say that the same reasoning that has given us same-sex marriage also leads almost inevitably to polygamy and polyamory.
Of course, you're exactly right. And that's because when you see marriage simply as a vehicle of adult fulfillment, then there really is no reason to place any kind of limitations on the marital union. There's no reason for it to be permanent. There's no reason for it to be dual gendered. There's no reason for it to be limited only to two. There's no reason for it to even be an exclusive union, because there's all different kinds of adult arrangements that make adults feel personally happy. And so if we define marriage simply based on what is a fulfilling union for adults, we should never limit marriage in any way. But if we believe that marriage is a critical institution that is aimed at bringing forth new life and raising that new life, then there are very good reasons to limit marriage. But when the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage, in essence, they decided on a definition of marriage that said children are not key to this institution. And so children and their rights to be known and loved by mother and father, children and their needs to be raised by a man and a woman in a permanent union no longer factor into our collective definition of what a marriage is.
How would you characterize the Supreme Court's definition of marriage? They didn't come out and define marriage, but there's one hanging in the air, isn't there?
Right. And it simply is like whatever makes adults happy. And honestly, this is the logical conclusion to the evolution of marriage. Polyamory is the logical conclusion to the evolution of marriage that began really with no-fault divorce. when we said that you can get divorced for any reason, just because you're unhappy, unsatisfied, have irreconcilable differences, nobody had to be at fault. And so in essence, when the marriage ceased to make you happy, then the marriage ceased to exist. Well, take that into the definition of marriage. Well, why would we limit it to a man and a woman if two women can be happy together or two men can be happy together? And now we're moving that forward to polygamy. Well, if three people make me happy or four people make me happy, that should be a marriage too. So we have long been on this road and the evolution just continues, but it certainly was calcified in the Supreme Court's 2015 decision to legalize gay marriage across the land.
I'm intrigued by your connection to no-fault divorce, because divorce laws before that implicitly included the children. That's why they made it so difficult to dissolve marriages, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Divorce is not a one-time event for children. Divorce is really just the kickoff of a lifetime of transition, loss, and instability for kids. And if you're a child of divorce, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? One of your parents moves out, one or both of them repartner. Sometimes that lasts, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes that new partner has kids, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they get married, then they have another child. Oftentimes they divorce after that. Then another parent moves away. It's really the end of stability and a very finite connection to both mom and dad. And that is why before no-fault divorce, we had at-fault divorce, where we would reward a faithful spouse who was seeking to keep the marriage together, and we would penalize the spouse who was running off with the secretary or who wasn't willing to do the work or who was choosing alcoholism over their marital union. And the courts and society would be able to reward the faithful spouse with the house and the kids. These days, with no-fault divorce, it does not matter how at fault one of the adults are, the court must treat them equally. And that is such a disservice to children. Much, much better to discourage divorce, except when one of the spouses is found to be at fault, so kids can continue to have 100% of mom and 100% of dad every day, and the stability that goes along with them being married to each other.
Give us a little history of polygamy in the United States.
Well, we talk in our article, me and my co-author, Stacey Manning, that polygamy was widespread in certain communities in the 1800s. And the Republican Party, at their first party convention, actually wrote in their platform that one of the goals of the Republican Party was to eradicate what they called the twin pillars of barbarism. And they listed slavery and polygamy. So those are the two things that the original Republican Party says, these two things cannot happen in this country that we love. And they eradicated slavery. They led the charge on that in 1865, and finally outlawed polygamy in 1890. And so there have still been pockets, especially in extreme Mormon sects, that have continued to practice polygamy, but it has definitely been illegal, under the radar, and hidden. But we do have children who have grown up in those extreme fundamentalist LDS homes, and many of them have grown up and are starting to speak out against the practice.
What are they saying?
Well, there's stories that have come out recently, and I think that there's even reality TV shows. I haven't watched them, but I did reach out to one woman whose mother was conscripted into a polygamous union when she was very young and finally escaped that very controlling patriarchal compound when she was five. And she said, this is not a good idea, that it almost always leads to inequality. There's a lot of pedophilia, she said, low education, and the women are exhausted. She said, you know, they do share the load in terms of housework, but there's so little left over for the children in terms of emotional availability. And of course, the kids don't get a lot of their dad, who has so many children with so many different wives. So it really does treat the children unequally.
Progressives will insist that there is a difference between polygamy, that kind of situation you're describing there, which is bad for everyone except the one husband,
right,
and polyamory. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'd say maybe the adults feel like there's a difference, but for the kids, there is no difference. And that's what Them Before Us is about. We actually don't care whether or not the adults feel like they're fulfilled and happy. We care whether or not children's rights and well-being are being respected and protected. And when it comes to those two forms of polygamy, the kids still do not get what they need. And in either situation, they are at risk. So what kids need is 100% of mom and 100% of dad every day in their home, loving one another and the stability that goes with that. They do not need additional non-biological adults in their home or in their life. Now, I will say that I know heroic step-parents, men and women who have stepped into the gap in the life of a child where a biological parent has failed or has chosen not to act like an adult. But statistically, when you look at the presence of non-biological adults in a child's life, which is the definition of polygamy, is more unrelated adults in a child's home, outcomes always diminish for children. And interestingly, you know, we got a couple more comments from children who had grown up in these modern, progressive, consensual non-monogamy is another way to talk about these polygamous homes, and they weren't fans of it.
You say that we can't call this move taken by Somerville, Massachusetts, progressive. We need to recognize that it's regressive. Why do you say that?
The sexual ethic that came out of the Judeo-Christian world rejected the idea that women were objects. And interestingly, this is outside of the scope of the article, but women flocked to Christianity because it held such a high view of womanhood, and it demanded that men be exclusively committed to them and them alone for their entire life. That was a very progressive idea back in the first century, and it is one that has continued to protect the rights of women and children all throughout history. The idea that a man can have several wives, or a woman should be sexually available to several men, or a man can have children with several different women, all of that takes us backwards. It statistically is going to put women and children at a disadvantage every time. We worked very hard to outlaw polygamy in this country in 1890, but now Somerville is bringing it back in the name of progress, and it will be women and children who pay the price.
I think if memory serves, Massachusetts was the leader through actions like this in bringing us same-sex marriage. Do you expect the same path to be followed by other states?
Well, we shall see, but I will say that there really is no limiting legal principle at this point. There's no rational basis to say, no, it should only be two. We have destroyed the only rational basis to limit marriage in any way. And so that slippery slope that so many of us warned about is inevitable. And I don't know what legal challenges that we have at our disposal to fight against it. But what we do have is we have truth. We have the best social science that shows that children fare best when raised in the home of their married mother and father. And that truth is not going to go away, regardless of what some court or some city decides to legalize. That truth is going to remain, and we need to continue to be outspoken about the importance of mothers, fathers, and marriage, and that marriage, properly understood, is the most child-friendly institution the world has ever known. And indeed, marriage itself is a social justice issue for children, because as we shall see, when we are able to do more studies on children who have been raised in poly homes, we're going to find that, as some of the kids in the article described, it did not bring to them a sense of security or a sense of family. Rather, it was disruptive and disturbing for many of them.
Katie Faust is founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us. She's co-author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Massachusetts Town Legalizes Polygamy Using Same Arguments for Gay Marriage. You can read it and find a link to Them Before Us at our website. Click Talk On Demand Archives, issuesetc.org. Katie, keep up the good work, and we will see you soon at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks.
When we come back, listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. you can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Matt Walsh, Chris Roseborough, Greg Kokel, Hans Feeney, and Katie Faust at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes both live and on-demand viewing. For more information and to register, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The COVID-19 pandemic has caused many Christians to ask about whether or not the government should be telling the church when and how to gather around our Lord's gifts. In the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness, the Reverend Christopher Thoma takes up this question in his article titled, Executive Orders, Divine Command. To read this excellent article and more about the church's life in the midst of a pandemic, subscribe to the Lutheran Witness today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective, cph.org/witness.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.